my talk. Here we go.
He said he living life as a gringo. Where you question where you fit and every time you mingle. They say you do this with not enough that.
My rapping is really bad. This life as a gringo.
Yes, hello and welcome to another episode of Life as a Gringo. I am Dramos, of course. Now, before we get into today's topic, I just want to say I hope y'all had a great weekend. I know last episode I left off telling you that I was going to go to a flotation center where they do like those like water tanks and you float in the water with like the salt and all that kind of stuff. And it's like for meditation and it's like a Zen spa experience in like one of these flotation tanks. So for anybody who's following along at home that actually gives a shit, I did go and do that. It's been on my bucket list for a minute. I gotta say, not all it's cracked up to be. I really just was laying there in the water. I mean, it was cool, but I ended up falling asleep. I didn't like have this sort of like, man, like if anybody's seen the show Dave, the last episode, they put him into one of those tanks and he has like this whole experience of like, you know, seeing his whole life and all the mistakes he's made and all these things. So I was hoping to have a bit more of a spiritual experience than I actually did, but needless to say, it was relaxing. I might try a couple more times to see if maybe, you know, as I get used to it, I begin to have a more spiritual connection to it. I know that it's supposed to recreate like the closest thing to you being back in the womb, is what I heard, as weird as that sounds. But yeah, it wasn't anything too crazy for me. Maybe y'all have had a better experience if you tried this kind of stuff before. But definitely challenging myself to try some different things and do some stuff that's been on my bucket list. And that has been one of them. Now, with that said, after that update, let's talk about what we are going to be getting into on today's show. Now, I thought because the holiday season is coming up quickly, I mean, Thanksgiving is shit just next week at this point, which is absolutely crazy. I wanted to do something related to that. Next week, I will be doing an episode all about Indigenous people. Obviously, Thanksgiving has a very weird connotation to it. But, you know, personally, I do celebrate it with my family, but it's not necessarily about, you know, the Pilgrims and the Native Americans. It's really just a time to get together and break bread together and spend that quality time with one another. But with that said, I know for some people out there, a lot of people, I should say, it's not necessarily a time of peace, especially when it comes to getting together with your family. Depending on what your relationship is with your family, it can be a bit trying, especially if you are coming from a bit of a toxic environment. And judging by some of the responses that I got from my Ask a Gringo question, a lot of y'all are dealing with this. So I wanted to kind of just do a little episode kind of talking about, you know, ways to deal with your toxic family during the holidays. And break down some tips like that. I also think it kind of lends itself to how we speak to people who we disagree with. I think we're living in a world right now that is very, very much, man, separated, I guess you could say, especially when it comes to politics and a lot of these social issues that we're seeing. And I've been guilty of just kind of writing people off, you know, and as crazy, especially when you talk about some of these conspiracy theorists and things like that. So I want to find a healthy way to approach this and find a way to actually be able to communicate with people rather than just kind of, you know, chalking it all up to them being racist and or crazy. So we'll talk about a bunch of that kind of stuff. I kind of feel like one leads itself into the other. Of course, we have our Ask a Gringo segment, like I mentioned. But without further ado, let's first get into our deep dive on this topic, as we always do, in a segment we call For the People in the Back.
Say it loud for the people in the back.
All right, y'all. So, you know, I like to get the experts on the topic usually for this section. And this one I actually pulled from neuroinstincts.com. It is a piece written by Dr. Rhonda Friedman, who is a clinical neuropsychologist. And this article is 5 tips for dealing with toxic family during the holidays. And as a preface to these tips, Dr. Freeman says, for many, the holidays will bring exposure to family members that are personality disordered. And although that is tough for anyone to handle, it is even more difficult for the empath or person filled with integrity, morals, and kindness. And I'm not going to front y'all. I Googled, what does it mean to be personality disordered? And what popped up was a personality disorder can develop if certain personality traits become too rigid and inflexible. People with personality disorders have long-standing patterns of thinking and acting that differ from what society considers usual or normal. Goes on to say people have problems functioning. It causes distress. And they deviate from the expectations of the culture, which I guess in some ways doesn't sound all that bad, but I'm assuming they're talking more so about people who have, things like narcissistic personality disorder, people who are all about themselves and things like that. People who have like an inflated sense of their own self-importance, and a deep need for excessive attention. They lack empathy for others. Those are some of the traits of like a personality disorder. That's specifically talking about a narcissistic personality disorder, which I think when you talk about toxic families, that is kind of a common personality trait for a lot of people. Now, let's go into the 5 self-care tips that Dr. Freeman thinks that you will find helpful. And the first one is check in with your body. How does that person make you feel? If while interacting with them, you notice your breathing becomes shallow, your neck, shoulders, posture feels tense, your mind is hunting for ways to get away from them, it's likely your stress and pain symptoms of the brain are activated. She goes on to say, it goes without saying this is not good for you. Try using a mindfulness tactic. Put your awareness into the here and now. Be an observer of your situation. Use that awareness to take steps necessary to wrap up the conversation with them. You might even have to boil yourself down to be the most boring form of a human possible. And she ends that little tip by saying, people who are toxic often feed off our stress, pain, and emotions. If you are interesting or in some kind of discomfort, they become more energized. Disengage if possible. And that's super interesting, actually. And I've never heard it broken down like that, but it makes so much fucking sense. And I can think of certain people in my life who this reminds me of. But basically, like, you ever meet those people that, like, the more it seems like you're getting mad or they're pushing your buttons, they kind of press a little bit harder. That's essentially what they're kind of, what she's describing here when she talks about this personality type. This type of person. And essentially, they're trying to get a rise out of you because it feeds them at that point, right? So any type of rise they can get out of you, they're going to want to continue pressing and continue on with that. So your best bet is to just keep hitting them with those,
Man, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah? Wow. And I do this all the fucking time. I have people in my extended family who I just don't necessarily fuck with based upon some of their political ideology, their social ideology. And I really just will minimize myself entirely until the conversation meets its demise or I find some sort of way to escape. So I've definitely used this tactic myself. The second one she talks about is practice boundaries. If they want to bring up negative topics to the group, rehash a disagreement you had or ruin your holiday in some way, you don't have to go along with their agenda. Conflict empowers them. At this point, I'm sure you've thought of what your personal boundaries are. This is an excellent time to practice those boundaries. Now, this is incredibly difficult in the moment. Obviously, people are pushing our buttons. They're doing it on purpose. They know certain things piss us off. They bring up a topic they know will piss us off. But at the end of the day, if you engage with them, you go down that rabbit hole, you start arguing, you're really just like pleasing them at the end of the day, right? Like that's what their intention was to get this rise out of you. And the best practice is to not engage them once again, not allow them to bring this version out of you, no matter how hard they're pressing for it. The reality is you're at a dinner, you're spending some time with your family. Like it's a temporary moment. It's not worth going down this whole rabbit hole of getting into an argument with them. If somebody is speaking out something that is crossing a boundary of yours, you just don't have to engage with that person. Find a way to walk away and not be a part of the conversation anymore. Number 3 is do not educate someone who is personality disordered. Attempting to explain that you understand some of their limitations and want to be helpful will likely create larger problems. And she's specifically talking about pathological narcissists here. Basically, you acknowledging anything that is wrong with said person that you're talking to at this family function. Like if you acknowledge that there's something wrong with them, the way that they think, the way that they see the world, it's likely just going to put them in a defensive mode that ends up continuing to bring out the worst in them. It's not even worth recognizing this kind of stuff. I guess the general thesis I'm picking up here so far is do not fucking engage with these wild people that you have in your family. Number four is maintain emotional distance. You may say, quote, it's a small family gathering. I have no choice but to interact with that person. Dr. Freeman goes on to say, that's fine. You can still protect yourself. Our brain has a way of walling off our vulnerable emotions. You can lower and raise this wall. You don't have to be their victim. The mindfulness tactic discussed above is how you get your brain to shift into protective mode with that specific individual. You can say to yourself, he, she is disordered and the horrible things that you say will hold no weight with me. It's an internal form of no contact. Use visual imagery to imagine you have barred the most special parts of yourself from them. But of course, you will continue to give your beautiful energy and love to everyone else. It might sound difficult. However, I've had to do this a number of times at family gatherings. And most importantly, shifting into self-protection with specific people while socializing is great practice. This skill will come in handy when you encounter personality-disordered individuals in other areas of your life. And actually, this is something I practice without even realizing I'm practicing it, especially in the industry. I work in the entertainment industry where it feels like whenever you go and meet people, I used to go to a lot of these like networking events and things like that, pre-COVID, when we were being super social. And a lot of times I always felt like people were trying to sell me. People were like, always trying to pitch me something, or they were trying to size me up, whatever the case was. And I really just had like this internal wall that I put up. And listen, sometimes I might be like blocking myself from meeting new people, but at the end of the day, you recognize that most people just have some sort of agenda and are looking for some sort of way that they can use you. So for me, I would really just kind of give people the most superficial version of myself. And I don't mean that in a way of like, I'm so great type of thing. I mean that in like, you really just got like a skin deep version of me. I'm gonna let you do most of the talking, and I'm gonna give you kind of very basic interaction for myself. We're not gonna go much deeper into anything, and it was a way of me kind of putting a bit of distance between this person, obviously not necessarily physically, but at least mentally. They weren't gonna engage me in a conversation that was anything beyond just a quick casual type of thing. So, essentially nothing they say could have any effect on me, and I wasn't giving them any part of myself either in the midst of our interaction. Now, the last one she says is, remember who you are and that you are so darn special. She goes on to say, you do not need the toxic person to give you validation. You understand their form of damage. To allow access to 100% of you will easily land you in a world of pain from them. No one tries to cuddle a rattlesnake. You will most certainly get bitten. It's what snakes do. So protect your loving heart. You can interact with them, however, with caution, inner self-protection, self-awareness, and no desire for their approval. And that's a big one with family, especially as you get older and you start getting them questions of like, so why aren't you married yet? You having any kids soon? What are you doing for work? Like all the inevitable shit that ends up coming up where people are beginning to pry into personal aspects of your life with the sole purpose of basically trying to tell you whether or not you're doing life right or wrong, judging by your age or whatever the case may be. So you have to kind of develop this mindset of saying, their approval or lack thereof has no effect on my life whatsoever. I'm not here to impress anyone. I know I'm already incredible. I'm out here doing my thing. I'm focusing on what is important to me. So their opinion really should bear no weight or burden to me. And obviously, that's easier said than done, but I can tell you this is definitely something I've had developed as somebody who, was struggling for so long to find my footing in my career and make a life for myself. And also, I was, single for a very long time, so I had to deal with it on both ends there. And again, I'm blessed that my family is pretty cool, but I've still heard it from different people, particularly extended family. And you just have to find your own comfort in saying, like, yo, like, these people know nothing about my life, about what I'm trying to do and trying to accomplish. It bears no burden. I'm just going to let them talk and say their piece, because obviously that means a lot more to them to be able to share their opinion than it does for me to receive it. And that's kind of how you have to look at it. Basically, what she's saying with all this stuff is, go into it with the mindset of not allowing this environment to rile you up and to kind of keep the necessary people at a very specific distance and understand that their opinion really means nothing to you. And obviously, this is easier said than done. I think we can look at a blog post like this, and there are going to be a lot of extreme cases of people's families, being far more toxic than what we're speaking of in a post like this. But I just think generally speaking, at the end of the day, I think the consensus is that people are just trying to get, you know, a rise at you. They're trying to rile you up. That's what these people get off on. So rather than give them what they want, set up your own little, you know, emotional wall between you and them and keep it moving. Enjoy your meal, your day off from work, and get the hell out of there. I think that's an honorable mention too, by the way. I saw it on another one saying to make sure you set a boundary as far as time goes. Like, you could plan out, okay, we're only going to spend 2 hours here, and that's that, you know, and that at least gives you an out mentally and both physically, you know what I mean? So the things like that, setting your boundaries, I think in that way, in a physical nature, obviously, is incredibly important as well. Now, with that said, I want to get into the Mi Gente segment of the show. And this one is kind of a bit of an extension of what we're talking about. I found a really dope article from psychologytoday.com about how to actually engage with people that you disagree with, which obviously has always been a huge part of the holiday season, but also I think it's just becoming a huge part of our lives as things like politics and vaccines and everything in between have become so polarizing in our culture. So I do want to touch on that a bit. Before that, though, we'll take a quick break and then we'll be right back. Okay, so this right here for our Mi Gente segment is an article written by Melody Stanford Martin. For Psychology Today. She is a social ethicist and communications expert and the author of the book Brave Talks, Building Resilient Relationships in the Face of Conflicts. And I just find this fascinating because the world that we live in right now, as I've been saying, it's basically like it leaves no room for the actual truth. It's more so two people arguing just for the sake of being right. And that's kind of the current landscape of politics and social issues in our country right now. And for me, I've been guilty of just getting frustrated and writing people off as dumb and people who have their conspiracy theorist beliefs and just being like, all right, you guys are like fucking lost hope at this point. But I feel like the future more evolved me is asking the present me for just the ability to do a little bit better and to think about things in a bit more of an intelligent and empathetic way. And in order to do so, I think it's important for all of us to kind of figure out a way to communicate with people who we probably utterly disagree with on almost everything, at least when it comes to our moral cornerstones. And the reality is that the only way for us to get to a place of healing, and I mean all of us, let's say as a country, is to be able to find a way to have these difficult conversations. And even if you are on the right side, like, you know, of things, not necessarily the right or the left, but if you're on the correct side of things as far as, you know, wanting to be on the correct side of history when it comes to racial issues in this country, or, you know, just not believing outlandish fucking conspiracy theories like the ghost of John F. Kennedy Jr. is going to become president and make Donald Trump a king. If you are existing in a place of reality, and I would hope you are, if you're listening to this podcast, I'd like to think we live in a place of reality with these conversations that we're having. You know, it's important to be able to hopefully, you know, knock some sense into people, right? I've had people reach out to me and ask, you know, how they could communicate with like family members who don't share their beliefs or don't necessarily understand that they're doing maybe the work of their oppressors and things like that. And I've always, you know, I've always taken to one of Charlemagne's quotes of your skinfolk ain't always a kinfolk. But I also think there has to be a way to communicate with people. So this article broke down 11 tips for talking to someone you disagree with. I don't think I'm going to get into every single one of them, but I want to kind of pull a few here just for my own personal growth and hopefully yours. I think that I don't see how we as human beings, as a culture, as a country, as just people in general, can get past some of the things that have been kind of coming to head over these last few years without being able to find a way to peacefully communicate with one another. I think that we're at a really weird time right now where we just need to find ways to better communicate with one another and not just be arguing to make the other person look dumb and prove that our side is correct, but also realize that I think at the end of the day, we're all just kind of wanting to be heard, right? Now, let's get into some of these tips real quick. The first tip she has on here is do tell people they matter. Before anything else, make sure you reinforce your relationship with the person. Saying things like, before I say anything else, I want to make sure you know that I care about you. Or, quote, I want to respect you and appreciate your perspective goes a long way. Instead of walking into a conversation for a fight, which immediately puts everyone in earshot on the defensive, try warming up with, quote, hi, it's me, someone who cares. Okay, so obviously she's saying to approach with a sense of empathy and recognize that the person you are speaking to is, in fact, a human being and that you actually care about them and their livelihood regardless of their opinion. And I'm skipping around here. One of the other ones she says is do acknowledge fears under the surface. She says, in my book, I argue that all conflict has some kind of fear at its core. Humans generally want to live and not die. We want to be free and not controlled. We fear chaos and seek meaning and order. It's important to recognize which fears are driving someone's belief structure. Man, that's so fucking relevant to what we're talking about right now. Obviously, when it comes to vaccines and the country and the political and everything in between, right? And she gives a couple examples here of like conversation points of how you would say things. And she says, quote, I can understand how you'd feel if you believe that if blank doesn't happen, the world will fall apart. Or I'm afraid of seeing my country crumble. Or do you know what I'm scared of? These are all kind of tactics or ways to tackle these conversations. So even that one about, quote, I'm afraid of seeing my country crumble. I think if we're talking about politics, if you're somebody on the left, the main argument against you is that you hate America and you hate democracy. That's what the right will always say. So if we're talking about a conversation like that, basically she's saying finding that middle ground, you're acknowledging that you are in fact afraid of seeing your country crumble as well. And I think regardless if you fall on the left or the right, that's the greatest fear of all of us, right? To see our freedom and our liberty in the country that has given us all so many opportunities. While it is obviously imperfect, it still has. None of us want to see the country as a whole fall and crumble, right? And that right there gives you a middle ground for somebody and allows you to kind of have a level playing field that you both at the end of the day want the same thing. And that's kind of where you then can begin to weed out some of the other conversation points. One of the other things she says is don't assume the worst. The vast majority of us want to be good. We want to fight for the best possible world and do the right thing. We may have different versions of how to get there, but it's important to assume someone means well until we have definitive proof that they don't. So then she says, try to make a point to say things like, quote, I can understand where you're coming from. I can see your intentions come from a good place. You make a good point there. And with this, as I read it, I'm like humanizing some of these people that I would consider to be like these crazy conspiracy theorists, right? Whether they be I have some in my extended family that like I've kind of just written off and I don't want to deal with, more than I have to. But at the end of the day, when you look at it, these people really do believe that, you know, their thought systems and what they're fighting for is, in fact, the best possible solution for this world, for this country. You know, the people who, you know, were a part of the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th genuinely believe that they were saving democracy and saving, the country from an illegitimate president in Joe Biden. So, like, as wacky as it sounds and as scary as their belief system is, at the end of the day, the reason why they're so passionate about it is because they genuinely believe they are fighting for good. You know what I mean? That's really what they believe in. And that's, you know, when you have these conversations with people who fall that way, you have to empathize with the fact that you understand that in their heart of hearts, they want what they believe to be the best. And I say that it's incredibly difficult to believe that in certain ways. But, you know, when you talk to these people, like they genuinely believe that, you know, that they are fighting for what's right and what's just. And it's important to keep that in mind. One of the other ones she says is don't launch verbal grenades. And I'm going to quickly say this, name calling. She says words like stupid, ignorant, crazy, blanket statements like the words always or never, zingers, gotcha moments or clapbacks. These are momentarily gratifying, but may erode your relationship with that person. She says curses as well. I mean, but also those like gotcha moments, the clapbacks, like yeah, they feel good, you know, in the moment, as she said. But if you just think about that in the terms of, like, if you're in, like, a romantic relationship, just because you got that person, you clap back at that person, you make them feel dumb for a second, that's not going to end the argument. That's only going to escalate it. So you have to think about it in those terms as well. One of the other ones she says is, show you understand even if you don't agree. She says, everyone wants to be heard, especially in disagreements. Not being heard or having our words twisted creates a lot of resentment. So take the time to listen. And after we listen, then make a point to reflect literally and out loud. And this is something I need to become better at. But also, it's asking questions to show and prove to somebody that you were actually listening to what they had to say. Everybody just wants to be heard, right? So she says some statements like this, quote, so if I understand correctly, blah, 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 fill in the blank, it seems like you are saying blank. Is that accurate? Can I summarize what I'm understanding so far? And all of this, I want you to recognize that, as silly as some of this stuff sounds, this is just like really good communication tactics, right? Like, at the end of the day, again, we all just want to be heard. We want to know that the person we are speaking to, regardless of who they are, is giving us their full attention and interpreting the things that we have to say and placing value on the things that we have to say. So by asking a question about something they just said to essentially reiterate, you know, the fact that you were listening, that always makes that person feel good. My girl is actually really good at this, and she's using some of her psychology background on me, I'm realizing as I read this. But let's see, I'm going to read a couple more here. She says, don't use sarcasm and refrain from speaking in sound bites. I'm really bad at this. I always will fucking use some sort of sarcasm here. So I need to definitely get better on that. One of the last couple things she says is, do teach and be teachable, right? Like, good teachers are patient, she says, gracious, and give people the space to discover at their own pace. They don't get mad at someone for not knowing something. And she also says, importantly, good teachers don't mistake uninformed for stupid, right? There's two different things. You could just be uninformed on a particular topic and not actually be stupid. And then she also says, be teachable too. When we're speaking to a peer, it goes a long way to allow ourselves to be challenged. Saying things like, quote, I never thought about it that way, or quote, that's new to me, I'm going to read up on that, shows that we are a co-learner. If we want to teach, we also need to be open to being taught. And also, like a phrase like, I never thought about it that way, just kind of validates that you respect that person, and you know, that you can respect that they you know, have an intelligent way of thinking, even if you don't obviously agree with it. And the last one she says on here, it says, do thank them for disagreeing. The last one is big. Say thank you when someone takes the time to disagree. It may not seem like it, but disagreement is truly a gift. When someone disagrees with us, they didn't have to take precious time out of their life to engage. They don't owe us their attention or courtesy. When they do choose to disagree with us in healthy ways, they are offering a courtesy. Try to recognize and honor the awkward beauty of that exchange. And she says, in conclusion, healthy disagreement is worth the effort. And man, as I read this, I'm really realizing I'm not the greatest communicator, at least when it comes to people who may have varying points to me. So I'm definitely going to work on that. And I just think it's a great skill to develop. I hope that wasn't too long and or boring or heady for anyone. But I just think in the world that we're living in today, to be able to have calm and collected and intelligent conversations with people is the only way that we're going to truly get to a collective place of healing, especially when you're hearing all of these kind of things about the potential of violence and the violence we have seen already. You know, we really need to learn how to communicate better with one another so that terrible things don't end up happening, and you know, our livelihoods don't have to be essentially put at risk just because we disagree on some things. Now, with that said, we're going to get into our Ask a Gringo segment. We'll hear from some of y'all when it comes to this this topic of toxic families and the holidays. But first, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Ask a Gringo.
I have a question. All right. So our Ask a Gringo segment, if you want to be a part of the conversations, at DJ Dramos on Instagram, I post it in my stories. And let's get into a few here who've had some opinions on this. And my question for my followers was, how do you deal with toxic family during the holidays? And I'm going to read a few of them here. At Sully underscore T underscore 85 says, I can only handle my parents in small dosage. Go in with an escape plan or a time limit. And yeah, that's incredibly important. I think I mentioned that earlier in the show. having a time limit, setting that boundary for yourself in a physical way and obviously a mental way as well, I think is incredibly important, incredibly healthy in instances that are a bit uncomfortable for us, you know. And obviously it's tough when you're talking about your parents. It's like there's so much emotion into there, right? Like, you know, regardless of how shitty your parents may or may not have been, I think a lot of people still feel that guilt of like, but it's my parents. You know what I mean? And that's a really tough thing to kind of work around. So I love that you're still, you know, taking the time to spend time with them, but you're also doing it on your own terms and in a way that doesn't violate your own mental well-being, which I think is a beautiful, beautiful thing. At Nicolosa underscore Vega said, I don't. Hubs and I prioritize our mental health because it makes us better parents. And that's beautiful. And it's obviously not beautiful that you can't have a relationship with certain family members. But at the end of the day, I always say this when it comes to certain things. Like, I've always heard people growing up, talking about that maybe their family didn't like who they were dating or didn't agree with the career choice that they were going towards and this and that. And I think for me, what I always kind of told them was, at the end of the day, you're going to be the one going to bed every night with that person and waking up to them every single morning. Not your parents, not your friends, not anybody else. You're going to be the one every day, you know, waking up and driving to that job or working that job every single day. Not your parents, not your friends, not anybody else. So those decisions that are affecting you and solely you, essentially, you need to make them for you, regardless of anybody else's opinions. And I say that as an example of prioritizing your own mental health, right? And that's what's beautiful about what Nicolosa was saying, was that she had to make a decision, her and her hubs had to make a decision for their own mental health. And at the end of the day, I think that, you know, supersedes anything. And I've seen a few people talk about drinking on here, some joking, some not joking. At Bren J Life Coaching says, I used to drink and ignore or avoid. Now, especially after reading Think Again, I think I'm going to choose to try and learn and have conversations plus respectfully disagree. And I think that's the ultimate like level of growth right there, right? And I'm not here to tell anybody, that them avoiding their family is the wrong thing for them. I think we all have different circumstances and different ways of doing things. But I think if we're trying to become the most completely evolved version of ourselves, definitely finding a way to have, you know, those conversations that might be a little bit awkward with certain people, and just finding a way to be able to accept, hey, this is who they are. I don't agree with it. We can have a conversation. And like you said, I'm going to find a way to respectfully disagree. I think that's obviously like the ultimate level of human growth. Obviously, sometimes that might not even be worth it, depending on the situation that you're dealing with. But definitely, I think for me, I'd like to be able to get to that point. I'm kind of there to a degree when it comes to certain extended family members, but it still kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And I still definitely, at times, get a bit annoyed at their presence. And that's something I would like to be able to work through a bit. And last one, actually, I want to read is at Jade underscore Durrani. I love this one. She says, I don't. Friendsgivings and creating my own family became my peace years ago. And I think that's beautiful. Right there. I think that, again, we all have different circumstances. Some are going to be more extreme than the others. But I think being able to create that sort of social interaction, that sense of community and family with people that you genuinely do love and you actually do fuck with, even if they're not necessarily blood related, I think is beautiful. And I think it kind of is an incredible, I think, life hack to a lot of what we're talking about, you know. I think it's recognizing what's truly important to you personally and spending time with those things. And obviously, in this case, we're talking about people. So I think that's a beautiful thing. And man, I appreciate y'all for sharing, your own experiences with family. And I think that it definitely makes me kind of realize how blessed I am, to have the family that I do. While we're not perfect, definitely being able to see my family and enjoy time together and being able to be people that I genuinely love and get along with, I think is a beautiful thing. And people that don't necessarily affect my mental health, with the exception of a few distant relatives. But I'm definitely feeling very fortunate and I'm sending nothing but love and positive energy to y'all who maybe don't have the same experience. But man, I just respect the hell out of everybody who's kind of taking a stand for themselves and their own well-being, regardless of what decision you're making and how you're choosing to spend your holidays. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and I'm inspired by a lot of y'all. So thank you so much for sharing that. Now, with that said, let's quickly kind of, you know, tie everything we learned up in this episode into a neat little bow in a segment we call Conclusion Stew.
Time for Conclusion Stew.
So I think, man, we kind of touched on a lot of different things here on the show. But I think kind of going to the first section of, you know, five tips for dealing with family members, those of you who choose to do so. A lot of it, I think, is setting boundaries and some of it, be it physical when it comes to giving yourself an out as far as how much time you're going to spend, or mental ones, you know, as far as how much you're going to allow people in. And that might mean with how much you share, but also how much you're going to allow the words that they say to affect you, right? I kind of always look at this kind of stuff in the way of like, I have different expectations for different people in my life. You know, I have certain friends or acquaintances that I know that I can count on for certain things, and others that I know are only going to be there for this one thing. You know what I mean? And I don't expect anything else from those who I know will come up short in certain areas, right? And that's kind of how I've trained my brain to hopefully not be as disappointed in people when they aren't able to follow through. You know, like we all have that one friend that you like invite somewhere and it's like, all right, it's 50-50 if they're going to actually show up. They said they're coming, but it's 50-50. And you're kind of at a point in life where you're just like, hey, if they show up, awesome. If not, hey, it's just typical Robert. You know what I mean? And you don't think much of it. And I think that that's like a healthy way to kind of look at these situations where it's like, listen, you know, my uncle is a little bit crazy and has a fucked up sense of politics and how things work in this country. So I'm not going to expect him to, you know, have much else to say than a lot of things that I completely disagree with. And that way you're not setting yourself up for, you know, disappointment when this person starts saying things that you don't agree with. And hopefully you're saving yourself some of that potential frustration. And then touching on kind of the communication tactics I was talking about, I just think that being able to find, I guess, a sense of empathy and then humanizing people that we inherently disagree with on so many levels, I think is an important healing tactic. I mean, we're living in incredibly divisive times right now where, you know, basically you have to exist on one side or the other. And it's not about facts. It's not about history. It's just about trying to be right and make the other person wrong, essentially. And I don't see how if we continue down this path, it's going to end up with anything good. It's just going to be more and more fighting and escalating acts of violence. And obviously, that's an extreme example. I'm talking about the current unrest in our country. But I also just think in general, it's just also a good representation of how we communicate or don't communicate with people in our lives, be it family, you know, people on the street, friends, whatever it is. I think the idea of being able to empathize and understand that you're talking to a human being who genuinely has strong feelings about, you know, whatever point it is that they're standing behind. And rather than trying to go into a conversation eager to prove them wrong and debate them and make them feel dumb, going to it instead in a way of genuine curiosity and wanting to know, you know, why it is they feel so passionately about this and genuinely listening and wanting to hear them out, I think goes a long way. Because we as human beings, I think at the end of the day, we just want to feel heard, you know, we want to feel seen and like we're being, you know, appreciated. And I think all that goes a long way towards getting to a place of healing. And lastly, just shout out to all y'all who have, you know, really complicated relationships with your family. And I know for a lot of people, myself included, for different things, the holidays can maybe stir up certain feelings and not all good, obviously. But shout out to y'all who are really, you know, finding ways to protect your own mental health and put yourself in positive situations, you know, be it just avoiding certain people altogether or finding healthy ways to communicate with them or just finding healthy ways to kind of supplement what you might be missing from your family. But instead, you know, celebrating with people that you genuinely do care about, you know, regardless of if they're blood related or not. I just salute all of y'all for finding things that work for you and prioritizing your own yourself and your you know immediate family and your guys' health at the end of the day, I think is incredible. So salute to y'all for being incredible, man. I love all my listeners and everybody that participates in this podcast. You guys are definitely inspiring me with each and every show and hearing your guys' points. So I thank y'all for being a part of these conversations. Now, with that said, thank y'all for tuning in to another episode of the show. All the love, feedback, once again, I know I sound like a broken record, has been absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for the reviews. I've been seeing them pop up on Apple Podcasts. So I appreciate y'all for doing that. If you haven't yet, greatly would appreciate leaving a 5-star review and a comment. It really does help with everything. And also, if you haven't yet, check out my YouTube channel. I'm putting out a lot of different content on there to hopefully inspire some of y'all. YouTube.com/DramosOfficial. I actually just put up a video with the 5 lessons that I learned from Nipsey Hussle that have changed my life. So that's one of my favorite videos I put out there. A lot of really good kind of gems in there for anybody out there. So definitely check that out. Again, YouTube.com/DramosOfficial. And man, that's it. I'll be back on Thursday with our Thursday Trends episode. I appreciate y'all once again. And until then, stay safe.
Peace.
Life as a Gringo is a production of the Michael Dura Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.